Welcome to Love Hate Automate, the podcast where digital dreams dress tomorrow's reality. I'm your host, Dale Parr, and with my weekly guests, we'll be diving into the vibrant world of digital fashion. Each episode, we stitch together innovation, creativity, and a splash of the unexpected. I have the pleasure of warmly welcoming an incredible designer to today's show. He's a 3D designer, an art director in the luxury goods space. But not only that, a specialist in Clo3D. Tell our audience a little bit about you and some of the projects you've been working on, because I know there's a couple of very, very special footwear pieces you'd probably like to mention.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. My name is John Barrick. I'm a 3D designer and art director focusing on digital fashion and luxury goods. And I'm helping brands with digital transformation for commerce, garment development, and creative use cases. I've been active in the 3D space for the last 6 years, exploring my style and collaborating with other creatives. And nowadays, I'm trying to find my own spot in the ever-changing digital fashion community. One of the latest projects that I did was for my own brand, Retro Valve. I've been developing some collections and some garments. And the latest collection was heavily racing inspired as a fan of that. I just wanted to explore how I can merge those two different concepts, heavily different concepts. But we've been seeing some cool examples of how racing and fashion could be one. Mm-hmm. Ferrari has been doing some super cool stuff with their Ferrari style collection. And Formula One is also adding some pretty cool touches here and there with their racing jumpsuits, I think we could call. So I was super inspired by that, and I just wanted to explore what I can do with those. The latest addition to the collection was the Frack sneaker, Frackstar. It has three different colorways, and it had great feedback, to be honest. It's probably the best project I've ever did.
It's an incredible shoe. I do recommend that you guys go and find John Barrack's Instagram and have a look at the Trackstar. It's an incredible looking sneaker, and the quality of the render is jaw-dropping. When I first saw it, I had to double take, you know, because it looks like a real thing. So, John Barrack, what's the best place for people to see that piece in your other work?
The best place to see that in all of my other garments, all of my other collections, would be Instagram. That is at johnbarrack1.0. That is my username on Instagram. I just love Instagram because I can directly and right away, I can just connect with people. I can answer any questions. I can start up conversations, and same thing for people who want to be included.
Yeah, class, brilliant. But before we go on to the Love Hate Automate section, it'd probably be good, as we're talking about some of your work and some of your renders, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your technology stack. What tools are you using?
Right, so if we're talking about garment creation, specifically being tops or bottoms or beans, head beans, caps, all of those stuff, I am using the latest release of Clo, that is Clo 7.3, I think. With that being said, I think the best way to approach, at least this is what I've been doing, for sneakers or for bags or a bit more hard surface edges, with hard surface objects, I think the best way to go, at least for me, has been just hand-on classic modeling, and I do that inside Cinema 4D. Mm-hmm. I have seen some designers in their works that they do all these crazy looking sneakers in Clo. And it just doesn't, for me, it doesn't work exactly that way, because I just want 100% control over what I'm doing. And Clo, it does give you control to an extent, but it's a bit of a like collaborating with that software, because it's a simulation program and you kind of have to work together with it. It doesn't always do what you exactly want. So sometimes you might have to export what you just did into Blender or Maya, your choice of 3D suit, and do some hand adjustments, some micro adjustments here and there. With that being said, I do all of my sneakers and bags in Cinema 4D by classic hand modeling. I texture them inside Substance Painter. which is a widely known and accepted software. If I need to do some more custom fabrics, some custom textiles, I do that in Substance Designer to be used in Substance Painter, which is a pretty good workflow that Adobe kind of developed over the past few years. And the rendering engine I use is Rexif for Cinema 4D.
And so that's a render farm, or do you do it on your hard drive?
That is on the hard drive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. Wow, that must take a good few minutes, if not longer.
Oh, definitely. Kind of depends on what you're using as a hard drive hardware. But if you have a good GPU, it shouldn't take that long.
Yeah, yeah. Just thinking about this sneaker workflow there, some of my experiences have been, I think we might touch on Gravity Sketch later, but yeah, just using Gravity Sketch as for conceptual work, and then into Blender for the modeling, and then Substance for the texturing.
Right.
But I guess it all comes down to personal preference a lot of the time, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Again, some people really love doing everything in CLO. Also, CLO lets you texture in CLO. It lets you render inside CLO with the latest version update. You can add camera animations. You can do a lot of lighting that was not really well pronounced, in my opinion, in the past few versions. Now you can do a lot of stuff. I love having all of the control I can have in a free 3D space with Cinema 4D. I think for the time being, that is the more reliable solution as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Right. Well, let's get into the main event. So, love, what is it that you're enjoying around, you know, digital fashion, the community, the cultures within the space? Tell us about the thing that you love about the scene.
Right. So what I've been loving so much is the community and the culture of collaboration and partnership in digital fashion. It is just so warm and so welcoming environment. Doesn't matter what kind of a background you're coming from, because I personally did not start with fashion design. I did not start with 3D either. I have a background in graphics, then I studied 3D design and film in Canada, Vancouver. But eventually it kind of evolved into a fashion kind of workflow. I was always interested in it. I just never had the chance to kind of jump on it, I guess. But the community is definitely giving you the space and the support to kind of keep evolving yourself and exploring your own style. And all of this development, all of these updates in this digital fashion space is actually happening so fast and so loud. It is actually a bit, sometimes for me, it's hard to keep up with all of the developments, like the latest development with Psyche enlisting legendary director Nicola Formichetti as their artistic director. In my opinion, that is probably the biggest happening in the digital fashion space in the past few years, even though we saw a lot of great examples, but I think this is a great example. You probably heard us 3D designers or just digital fashion enthusiasts saying that the fashion industry needs to be disrupted, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You probably heard this. But what is that disruption exactly? This is the disruption that we definitely need. Imagine all of these, you know, legendary directors, legendary designers, being included, wanting to be included in this space and this movement is probably the biggest disruption that the fashion industry ever needed. And I'm saying it needed because I do believe fashion industry is a messy industry. It needs innovation for sure. It needs creativity. It needs collaboration more and more. And this happening just shows you how good of a community it is and how welcoming it is, because I was fortunate enough to be included of the Nicola Formichetti session with Psyche as they were introducing them as their artistic director. And we were able to ask him questions right away. And it is just an incredible opportunity to have. And that is exactly what I love the most.
Yeah, it blows the doors open, doesn't it? And it shows the traditional world that this isn't just a hypey fad. It isn't just a catchphrase like, you know, whatever it happens to be this year, be it metaverse or crypto or something else.
Definitely.
This is an art director with an incredible resume of ideas and creations and collaborations, and he wants to go digital. He wants to go digital first. He wants to probably go digital, 100% pure digital, as he's working with the Psyche Collective, who are incubating the future of luxury. So you're right.
Definitely.
It's a big statement, and it would be very, very interesting to see who else in the coming months and years starts to make that pivot towards digital first.
Exactly. And, you know, Nicola stated that he was, you know, looking forward to be educated and to educate as well.
Yeah.
And I think that is the best thing I've ever heard in a community coming from an other background as a designer who's coming from another background. It is unlike I've ever seen so far.
Yeah, that's a really interesting pickup, actually, because, you know, some, you know, not all, obviously, but some people, once they reach that echelon of status, they think they probably don't need to learn. And actually, they think that they kind of know and have the expertise and experience to navigate everything. But for him to be as frank and open to say, this is a new world, this is something I'm excited about, but it's going to take, you know, a concerted effort from myself to learn and develop and understand the constraints, that's so open-minded, and that will actually lead to some really strong outcomes.
Exactly.
I know when I've kind of moved from 12, 13 years of fashion, traditional fashion, you know, into the video game space, it was a huge transition because cloth and simulations, emotes, animations, they just don't work in the same way. They don't drape, they don't flow in the same way. There are lots and lots of constraints, and it actually makes the process between concept and product design, product development, really hard, because it feels like you're having to kind of water down because things just do not work. Even though we have sense of it's you know, creativity knows no bounds within the digital world, they actually do. There are lots of constraints that you have to navigate, and it's quite a learning curve, and also lots of language as well and terminology that I think is still in the early days of forming, you know, that kind of, you know, those bridges of communication between technology and fashion, they're still forming, and everyone's still having to learn what each discipline are trying to convey, you know, when in their creative process. So I love the fact he's open-minded and looking to learn. Fantastic.
Exactly.
So on to the challenges within the industry. What is it that's bugging you at the moment, John Barrett?
I think the first thing I can mention is how these AI image generators kind of adding this interesting taste in everyone's mouth. You might as well saw, I personally did, a few, you know, contractors or employers, studio owners, they are sometimes treating these AI image generators as a one-stop shop for all of their creative use cases, for their marketing use cases, even for their development use cases. And I think that is just not right. At least not yet. And I'm saying this as a designer who wants to welcome AI, and I want to welcome what it can offer in terms of like how I can make sure that my workflow is the most efficient, is the most reliable. For the time being, AI is not really there, not yet, because as a designer, you always have to make sure that you're able to, you know, go back a few steps. You need to make a change. You need to go 10 steps back. If the client says, hey, let's go back to the version that we did together 2 weeks ago. But if you did that with AI, you probably cannot do that right now. So I am just not really, I don't want to be discouragement or anything, but it's just not the best solution for creatives or the employers as well, because we have to be reliable and efficient in terms of workflow, in terms of pipeline, in terms of timing. And AI is just not ready to do that. And I'm encouraging all the newcomer designers, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds,
yeah,
just make sure you are noting down that the work you have posted or the work you have just developed or sent to a client, at least partially made by AI. Because what else? I think you might also run into some legal problems. If you are in the middle of a project and you run into a licensing issue because the AI image generator used something you didn't know that existed, or something belongs to another company, licensed to another company, that is not going to be a fun time either for you or for the client. So make sure you are researching, make sure to stay safe when using AI. But the biggest warning here for as a designer, I think, would be go to the clients, because I heard like a lot of layoffs happening. Maybe not in terms of game development studios, because that requires a lot of control, but some smaller teams, smaller companies, people, you know, laying off creatives from the marketing team that believing that they can use AI from now on, moving on. That is just not right. You will always need a designer.
Oh, absolutely. You know, human-machine symbiosis is probably something that always stays in my mind. You know, the people, the creators need to have the understanding, the intent, you know, the creative intent, what the project means, what it means internally to the team and organization, what it means also externally, you know, the kind of response and reaction you want to the artwork, to the campaign, what's it there to do, what emotions are, is it there to generate within the audience. And AI, like you say, just there isn't enough control. And I think it's quite an interesting one for Automate, perhaps having some version control within AI. That sounds like something that could actually be really useful, because, you know, I know a little bit about machine learning, and my instincts, and don't, you know, I probably need to fact check this myself, but it rarely does the same output twice, if ever, even okay. If you give it exactly the same prompts, you know, moments apart, it generates something different. And the likelihood is that it, because it's ingesting so much feedback from other users, certainly on Midjourney, where you have tens of thousands of concurrent users, the models are learning all the time. They're learning, they're adapting all the time. And so what you asked it 2 minutes ago has a different, it has a different set of outputs now. And so, like you say, it's great for just speeding up a concept process. But like you say, the final pieces and the iteration of that development 100% has to be down to skilled creators. I completely agree. It's about using the tools in the right moments by the right people, and not being completely dependent on it, because actually it's exciting, but it's not wholly reliable. So now I started using Midjourney probably about 18 months ago. I think it was June of 2022, and it blew me away. I burnt through my credits like almost instantly, and then I found myself on like a $30 a month plan. Like the same day, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing, and that would have been Midjourney. I don't know, probably version one. By the time I got to version five, I've started to get a bit bored of the output. To be honest, I think it's really, really predictable a lot of the time. And
right.
You know, when I see AI content that people are trying to use as a promotional tool, I don't pick up on like the emotional side of things. I just scroll past, because you can tell it's, and don't get me wrong, like the iteration of prompt is a skill and it's time consuming, and you know, someone in Illustrator may create something in 3 hours, and it might take someone in Midjourney longer, but still I don't know, it just lacks a bit of love. I don't know. There's something, I can't quite put my finger on it.
Definitely, the human touch.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think I think we completely see eye to eye on that one, John Barrack, and I'm sure there'll be lots of other creators who are probably having similar thoughts on AI. We've kind of like leapt into automate during the love and the hate section, so let's just kick off automate in full flow. So, what is it that bothers you in terms of your workflow, or what is it within new hardware that's exciting you, or what tools, are in your wildest fantasy? What would you like to automate?
Okay, so automate. I think we need more immersive experiences. With the latest release of the Apple Vision Pro, we've seen a good chunk of examples of immersive experiences made for specifically made for the Apple Vision Pro, such as J.Crew did a cool virtual closet. Alo, I think, did a cool app called Alo Sanctuary. Now, those are all awesome, and it's so good to see that immersive experiences are developing in terms of use cases for consumers or commercial stuff. Something I definitely want to see, though, and this is something that I want to, witness actually, these immersive experiences being made for creative people and for designers so that we can collaborate and co-create in a better way. Because, speaking as a designer, one of the biggest problems, doesn't matter if you're working in a team or you're direct working solo or a client, is communication and making sure that you're showcasing your product in the exact way it is. Because even though us, 3D designers, we can see our product in 3D at all times, but clients will probably not have that chance. And sometimes this creates that miscommunication. So I definitely want to see some more immersive experience for creative use cases, where we can work together, where we can be in the same virtual showroom, show our garments, show our sneakers, show the outsole and how the tongue was made and what kind of textures we're going to use. It is just going to save a lot of misunderstandings and communication time, sample creation time. It's going to save a lot of things, I think. And I think this is also going to promote a lot of the digital protection as well. Mm-hmm. Because as a designer, digital designer who wants to jump onto the digital train and not being exactly sure how to do that, because I personally never had an experience like that, because you have a few of good obstacles on your way. Like, what kind of a manufacturer am I going to get in contact with? What kind of a material or fabric do I have to use? What kind of a budget do I need to have? So with these use cases that we can offer to the designers, to the creative people, I think we can definitely find some good answers on those topics as well.
Yeah. I hear you there, John. I think it's B2B upstream and downstream experiences would be hugely valuable.
Right.
Because like you say, it's that point of communication, be it in the room or virtually, up through the lens of a client so they can get a full 360 immersive understanding of what they've, what product they're looking to develop and how that's being outsourced, and also downstream into the supply chain, making sure that everybody understands what the product is, what the criteria is, making sure it's delivered, stitch by stitch, absolutely perfectly.
Definitely.
For me, I think that's probably where the Apple Vision Pro and the Quest 3 probably got its biggest audiences, I would say. It's going to be in design and engineering, maybe some training and education. But it's a B2B product still. I think that's where it has its most potential. I think that's probably where it'll get, the people and the employees who are using it as part of their day-to-day life, they'll get they'll use it regularly. They'll get a really strong emotional bond with how good it can be and how useful it can be. And that's when it will start trickling down into the hands of the consumers. I just think it's probably too early for people to be walking around in headsets. Yeah, I still think there's a couple of years for people to kind of get used to that whole idea of wearing a headset all day. But spatial computing is absolutely amazing.
I did
really enjoy what J.Crew developed last week. That was really exciting to see. Mm-hmm. Just a different approach to e-commerce. And I was chatting with Marco Ruffa from Pinko on LinkedIn, talking about, you know, is e-commerce kind of still fit? I've had this conversation with others, actually, Joshua Young as well. He's talking about it's such a bland experience, e-commerce, and it's been so convenient over time that the brands that do well in it are the convenient, fast-moving consumer goods type product where, you know, people need what they need. It's consumable. It's quick. And no need for returns. The Amazons of this world. But then when you're talking about luxury fashion, where it's like textiles and fit, it doesn't work as well, because obviously you can see by the challenges and the returns rates and other problems. I think immersive experiences for B2B professionals sounds like an excellent automation.
Definitely.
Well, that wraps up Love Hate Automate. John Barrack, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Just give the audience a reminder on how they can stay in touch with your work.
Oh, sure, Dale. Our pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much for having me. I will be super happy to connect on LinkedIn. That is Jambak Karakash. And you can follow my journey as I unfold more pieces, more collections for my brand RetroVals with upcoming collaborations on Instagram. That is at Jambak1.0. And feel free to say hi.
Perfect. So whether you're a creator, a builder, or a player in the digital world, have fun and enjoy building and being at the frontier of technology that is definitely changing the future. We'll see you next time on Love, Hate, Automate, Fashion's Future Unfolding.